Attendance regulations can be found on the standing orders as well as bylaw 100. See if you will, did anyone come in while I was doing attendance that missed their name being called? As long as you came in during attendance, I will count you. Okay? So, if we go to our standing orders, we'll begin there. Attendance requirements. Standing orders state that the speaker will take attendance orally 3 times each meeting, once during speaker's business, once prior to the recess, and once immediately prior to adjournment at, this says 10 p.m., there's a note for CAC that says 10 p.m., whichever is the earliest. Attendance will be recorded on the Students' Council attendance spreadsheet in the following manner. A yes with an open member is present, a or proxy or council designate, or YT showing teleconference either the Students' Council live stream, Skype, or telephone. And will denote if a member is absent for that particular roll call. Members of the Students' Council may attend council meetings via audio video conference services upon providing the speaker with appropriate notification. Members attending via audio video conference services may continue doing so during in-camera sessions. So just a reminder for that, I have not been getting notifications of people attending by the live stream very often. I've been feeling fairly good with proxies. However, I have not been getting notifications of attendance via live stream, so please make sure you're getting that in. Formal attendance regulations and penalties will be found in bylaw 100, which we'll look at now. So bylaw 100 indicates the penalties. Satisfactory attendance is defined as being present for at least 50% of roll calls per trimester. Unsatisfactory attendance is defined as being present for less than 50% of roll calls per trimester. Counselors are expected to attend, send a proxy or council designate, meetings of Students' Council is a minimum expectation of holding office. The council must maintain satisfactory attendance this trimester to remain a council for the following term. You must maintain satisfactory attendance to remain a council for the following term. Say that again. Formal attendance percentages shall be calculated for each council at the end of every trimester by the speaker and be provided as an information item to Students' Council. The attendance spreadsheet is publicly available to everyone on the council website. Leave of absence for elections shall not be accounted into the attendance spreadsheet. So if you end up running again, your leave of absence will not count you as not here, it will count you as not acceptable, and that will count towards your attendance. Where a counselor has unsatisfactory attendance at the end of the trimester, they shall be declared in contravention of this bylaw and be automatically removed as a member of Students' Council. This will only apply to the spring and summer and fall trimesters. Contributing counselors shall be able to appeal their removal to Die Board within 3 business days of their removal based on extenuating circumstances at the board's discretion, including those which are below. Personal circumstances, including medical, emotional, mental, or family emergencies, or academic program requirements where evidence of mandatory evening or overnight commitments is provided, confirming conflict with meeting these attendance requirements, or other circumstances as deemed reasonable by the Die Board. Unreliable proxies or council designates shall not be considered a reasonable excuse for appeal unless Die Board deems there were extenuating circumstances. During the appeal proceedings, the speaker shall attend the hearing, provide the official attendance record, and field any questions of the board. Should the Die Board approve the appeal of the contributing counselor, that counselor shall be reappointed immediately. The contributing counselor's seat shall not be replenished until the 3-day appeal period has passed or the subsequent appeal process has been exhausted. The speaker shall present and email these regulations at the first meeting of the Students' Council in each trimester, which is what I'm doing right now. I will also email these to you at the end of the meeting, so you all have access to them if you don't want to find them on the website. All right, we'll turn to what we're doing here. I will be special ordering the items from the late edition. There's one presentation and 2 items from Board of Main Business onto the main agenda. Next meeting of Students' Council will take place on Tuesday, November 13th, 2018 at 6 p.m. back here in Council Chambers. Before we start off with our business, I just wanted to have a quick discussion. It's really echoey. Is everyone else getting that, or is it just me?
It's good in the mic.
We have it in the mic now. I'll just move it over here. Okay, so it was brought to my attention after the last meeting that there's some counselors, and perhaps those who are newer, some of those who are not newer, been here the whole semester, feeling a bit uncomfortable and unwilling to ask questions or participate in debate because of afraid of being afraid of doing it wrong, or doing it wrong, or not sure what they can say. That I just wanted to take a second to let everyone know: if you mess up, if you don't follow Peter perfectly, it's not the end of the world. I will not reprimand you. I will not get mad at you. I will correct you so that it doesn't happen again. Robert's rules are here to help you and here to help the meeting go by. They're not here to make it more intimidating or make it more difficult. If you have any questions, whether it's during a meeting, before a meeting, after a meeting, whatever, feel free to bring them up. During a meeting, obviously, please use a point of parliamentary inquiry so we can follow our rules, which is on the back of your cards. If you're not sure what to say or what you can say, feel free to ask. Is there any questions at this point about what's going on? Yes, Governor Flynn.
Not a question, but can I just add on to what you said?
Sure, go ahead.
I've been around a while, and I still mess up. So if you remain silent because you're afraid of messing up,
no.
It's only natural, especially for first-year counselors when I did it a lot more than I do now, to not know everything. Like the speaker said, that's one of the reasons he's here, is to help guide us. So if you do have to make a mistake and you are given the correct way to do it or procedure or whatever, it's what you do with that information is even more important. If you continue making the same mistakes, that's one thing. But if you learn from that, it's not a mistake, it's a learning opportunity. So this, and I think any of the execs, the speaker, myself, your peers, we're all in this together. We're here to help each other out. There's lots of different avenues. So I don't think that shouldn't be a reason to stay silent. We have a duty to our constituents, people that voted us here, and I just want to try to find.
Thank you, President Larson, as well.
Thank you, Governor Fleming, Mr. Speaker. I do want to remind this council that at any point in time you can submit written questions to council submissions if you are not comfortable speaking. Those questions can go to any member of this council or our students' council. Those also include, for your benefit, the general manager. So if you want to ask questions about operations, you can ask them directly to the general manager as well, any of the executives, or directly to your peers.
Or to me.
Or to the speaker. Yeah.
I am a member of council. I'm not a voting member of council, but doesn't just dictate that in standing order. So if you have a question, feel free to ask me as well. Okay, any questions or points on that before we carry on? You know, I will also be making an effort to be more understanding of people who are unsure. I've also, starting today and now on, I will do my absolute best to be here earlier and be in my office and or down here before the meeting to answer any questions some of the people might have. Okay, I'm almost always here about 5:30 to start setting up, but before that I'll try and be in my office on the 6th floor council office if anyone has any questions. On that same note, our new counselors, we will need to get you keys and those kinds of things. So if President Larson, do you want to deal with that, or should I send an email to Rebecca? Okay, I'll send an email to Rebecca and see if she can do that. Okay. So I will try and get you guys keys and all those things and parking passes and all of that for soon. All right. Anything else before we carry on? Excellent. So we'll begin with presentations from late editions. We have a presentation from President Larson, who moves to do a presentation to council on the Government of Alberta Tuition Framework. Title: Government of Alberta Tuition Framework. Following October 29th, the Government of Alberta will be in the process of implementing the tuition framework. The presentation will give council the most up-to-date information presented by President Larson. Is there a second for this presentation? Mm-hmm. Councillor Sunday. Is there any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none, President Larson, you have the floor.
Yes, I did.
Is that this one?
Yeah, just pull that up.
Yes.
Okay, I'm also going to give these out, folks. Please take one, pass it down. It is a short briefing on what's occurring. Aside from that, I'm going to quickly give an introduction to what we're going to talk about, go over a few of the things that are in here, and a little bit of our timelines and where we're going forward. And then I'm going to kind of leave as much time as possible for your questions, your comments, your concerns, everything else. Before we get started, I want to remind everyone that the tuition framework is literally still being debated right now. So although you've got it in front of you, the odds that there are changes are, like, it can happen. It's likely not, but it can happen. As well, there are a number of things in front of you that have to be rolled out, particular regulation. Just because it's been announced doesn't mean it hasn't necessarily been adopted yet. However, Vice President Brown is also here to help me because I am not always the most up-to-date, and he generally is. Anyway, that moves us to our second slide. Brief outline that we're going to go over today, brief history of what got us here, domestic tuition, international tuition, mandatory non-instructional fees, market modifiers, institutional changes, other, and then a final comment from myself. Vice President Brown will probably handle most of the meat and potatoes. I will be here for comic relief.
What else is there?
Yeah. Generally, that's quite a bit, and trust me, this is very heavy. If you have technically related questions, as in what happens on Tuesday after the Sabbath, and we need to make sure that everybody's tuition has been levied, those are better in email. And we can help answer those questions as we go. So brief history of how we got here. In 2015, the government of Alberta launches a tuition review, roughly. I'm not going to put all the necessary dates. They also announced a freeze around that time, saying that we will have results within a year. We don't have results within a year. It leads to the 2015 through 2018, and the review is ongoing. During this time, the Council of Alberta University students develops a stance that the University of Alberta Students' Union also signs on board with, which is largely based around predictability, affordability, and access. We stuck with it, in particular the predictability point, and that's where it's gotten us. I will point out more clearly, and so will Vice President Brown, exactly what points have been ours over the past. Finally, in 17-18-ish, deadlines are set. We all have heard the fullness of time a number of times. We now have an exact time for how long the fullness of time is. It's around 2 years, 2.5 years, plus give and take a few hours. Very excited. We then have fall 2018, our new tuition framework, which will be taking effect over the next year and a bit.
Let's keep it going. Oh, we have the mouse. It's right for you.
Oh,
look at this.
Great. Okay, so we'll start with domestic tuition. Let's call this win number one. So starting with, there will be a cap on domestic tuition increases that will be at CPI generally, so that's Inflation Consumer Price Index. So generally those are pretty minimal changes, which are really, really great for students. This is something that CAUSE has been advocating for, and we at UASC have been advocating for a very long time. So we're really happy to see that. There's also going to be another tuition freeze up until the end of the 2019-2020 academic year, after which time this new cap is going to set in. That was a concern of ours in the past, where sometimes in other provinces the tuition freeze is lifted, tuition has shot up. That's not going to be the case here. We're going to start to see that capped and inflation rates set in. So that is a big win for us, absolutely. Exceptional increases are also called market modifiers. Do we have that as a point further on, or should I talk about that?
It's a little bit of both. We'll talk about how market modifiers have changed. Particularly, they will no longer be called market modifiers. Yeah. The university, along with students, can apply for an exceptional increase to tuition rates once every 5 years.
And this has to be done jointly by the institution and affected students, so if there is a new exceptional tuition increase, it's going to have to be done with the approval of students. And it's not entirely laid out what a process is going to be, whether it's a vote from council, whether it's a website, whether what that process is. That's something that we'll find out and sort of try to work with the ministry to establish a fair procedure going forward.
Importantly, legislating tuition is something that has been advocacy related since 2008. So what that means is tuition is no longer up to the ministry of the day. It will be a part of the legislation of Alberta, which is incredible.
It allows for about a 2-week window, if tuition regulation is ever to change, for us to actually put up a comment, to put up a fight if necessary.
International tuition. This was a really big issue here at the University of Alberta last year. I know a number of you were part of the protests, which included the 3.14% increase on international tuition. Luckily, we have seen positive movement on this, which is, again, something we've been advocating for a really long time, but it is worth noting that with our recent, I'd say, stronger pushes because of the hikes that the University of Alberta has introduced, those did make a difference. And it's worth noting that I know a lot of you, so for those of you who did partake in those protests, thank you for doing that. The government saw this happening. They saw just how concerned we were, and they took that into account with a lot of this legislation. So, international student tuition is going to be included in the tuition and fees regulation. So, domestic and international student tuition is now going to be the responsibility of the Minister of Advanced Education as sort of the overseeing body of the entire thing. That is a huge win for us. It's going to be essentially what's called a guaranteed structure. So once you are accepted into the University of Alberta, you're going to be told, here's how much you're going to pay, bless you, here's how much you're going to be paying for the 4 years of your degree, and the university cannot change that at any point. That basically avoids any sort of future situations like what we saw last year. So the universities still do have a certain amount of power to raise international student tuition, but it can't be for existing students, and it would only be for students who have accepted and who know what they're getting into. So it's a much more sort of transparent, predictable model, so we don't see what we had last year.
In all honesty, this is one piece where we are still waiting on a number of details. Because of the institutional nature of how international tuition has been levied across the province, it could vary, and it could be quite significantly different from institution to institution. So we are waiting for details on this, and we absolutely will let you know when we know more.
We're also waiting to see how this is going to impact existing international students. That's something we'll follow up on as soon as we find that out. Mandatory non-instructional fees, MNIFs. The existing ones will not change. However, future mandatory non-instructional fees can't be a comprehensive basket of good fees. This means that it's going to be a lot more transparent and a lot more sort of specific as to what those fees are going to go towards. Students are going to have a much greater say in this process. Again, it's not entirely clear exactly what our say is going to be. We'll have to follow up on that. But the fact that we now have a much better voice in the conversation around the fees that we actually do pay towards things that aren't courses is a huge success for us. This is also something we've been asking for a number of years. They're also going to be capped at cost recovery, so that means that university can't sort of make a profit on it. It has to be exactly what the cost is going to be.
For context, in 2016, the Students' Union did force the University of Alberta to the bargaining table on their MNIT, and this system kind of reflects our own, which is that we already negotiate MNIT in a certain way, which is actually quite amazing. But student approval in this is unbelievable. It's one of those things that we kind of threw in there as a moonshot, and it is actually in legislation, which is fantastic.
Go on. Market modifiers, we covered this a little bit. Once again, it's going to be called exceptional tuition increases from now on. One of the things that's worth noting is that they can only happen if they are tied to improving program quality, and that is going to have to be shown by the institution that submits them. So it can't just be, we want to put in a market modifier because it has to be detailed, or else the minister is going to refuse it.
The definition of market modifiers will be removed and completely from the legislation, which is quite substantive. Yeah. However, to note, current modifiers will remain in place. They'll basically be rolled in tuition for faculty.
And again, it have to be submitted jointly between institutions and the students, so it has to be something that students want. Again, those details are going to have to be sorted out later. Institutional changes, so not a ton that affects us. The biggest thing is that the six-sector model, so how the provincial government defines the different kinds of post-secondary institutions in the province is going to change. We're going to be called, so right now we're called a CARI, which is a comprehensive academic research institution. We're now going to be called a CARU, a comprehensive academic research university. So big changes there, great. They're also going to have what was called a BASI, so a bachelor, Bachelorette and Applied Studies Institution, which was like McEwen or Mount Royal, are now going to become undergraduate universities. So they don't have that necessarily intensive research component or graduate studies that we have at the University of Alberta. ACAD, so the Alberta College of Art and Design, is going to be called Alberta University for the Arts. Bit of a change. It's a little interesting to see how similar their name is going to be to ours, so that's probably sort of a future discussion, I imagine, in university administration might have a problem with. Anything else you want to add in here?
McEwen University got honorary degrees. They're thrilled. They also got a second board member for students, which is actually huge. Currently, we have two board members, myself and Governor Flamin. That allows us to split up committee responsibilities and also to have a second voice in the room if, for whatever reason, one of us can't be there, or if we have different opinions, in all honesty. That has now been given to a number of our peer institutions. Oh, I threw this up here for fun. Other question mark. This basically means that we're still finding things out as we're digging through everything. Legal legislation jargon is not entirely easy to interpret all the time. As you've noticed, we keep saying student approval or student consultation or students need to be involved. We haven't got a clear answer exactly what that means. In legislation, it generally means students counseled, almost universally. So that would be us. Now, I want this to be a kind of a thing that people pay attention to and universally understand. That is a lot of responsibility. It's actually an incredible amount of responsibility if that's where that lies. It basically means you would be responsible directly for fees and tuition costs exceptionally, which would be a lot. Finally, kind of my final comment is that this absolutely was the result of student advocacy, not only our own, but from partners across the province. Council of Alberta University Students, Alberta Student Executive Council, and Alberta Graduate Partnerships have absolutely brought this about. This would not have happened without continued and constant messaging. Like, it's hard to kind of say how much and how constant this has been. We didn't change our message when things got weird. We didn't abandon our approach when the minister said the fullness of time. We have always kept it going, and it's been a fantastic thing. A lot of these changes are damn near copy and paste, which is unbelievable. And it comes to the result of things like relationships. Like, this is my own self-congratulatory moment, and all honesty, I'm taking it in full. Years, literally, of photos with Minister Schmidt hanging out. It has been a long time coming. And not only the minister, the premier, and others, but honestly, the results of things like critics. Wayne Anderson is here. He's the critic for Advanced Education now. We meet with him regularly. That's the old critic. What's his name? Dave Ronnie. Fantastic individual. He's missing a finger from climbing Everest. He'll tell you about it any time of the week. Movements like letter writing was quoted quite extensively. The protest was the number one imagery for the background of the announcement. That's the leader of the official opposition for a time, Nathan Cooper. These things don't magically happen. They have taken a lot of constant criticism, a lot of constant conversations, and a lot of like this. So I would like to congratulate everybody here, as you are absolutely this does leave, I'm going to go back up to the other question, which is huge, which places us in this awkward position where in 2 weeks we go to government for our average lobby days, and we basically lobby on behalf of tuition or any other student costs. We have to fundamentally change what we've been saying. We've been saying the same thing for a long time. I am going to, and I've spoken to the speaker about this, move for a closed session following our business today. We have a fairly light agenda. So if you have controversial opinions or you want to throw something out there, that will be a time for it. However, right now, if you have any questions, feedback, concerns, anything else, please do so.
Would you like me to moderate?
That'd be great.
Okay, we'll begin with Councillor Sunday.
Thank you for your presentation. My question is just, okay, this is, how has the University of Alberta responded to this legislation announcement?
They released a fairly positive statement from what I read. It not only does this provide a lot of predictability for students, it provides a lot of predictability for institutions as well. Universities are often wondering or often release their budgets and approve them before the province releases a budget. And in that sense, in terms of things like, you know, backfill funding or whatnot, it's unpredictable for the university to plan their finances, especially if they don't know, is domestic student tuition going to change or is it going to still be frozen? So it provides that sort of predictability for them as well. So it's a fairly positive tone from them.
Thank you.
For other context as well, the Board of Governors, and thankfully, and administration, had already thought and planned out cohort model-based international student tuition accounts. So that will hopefully roll directly in for this year. We have a very strong position now to say that international students should be protected now and not in 2021.
Thank you. Also, those of you in the live stream, feel free to type questions. I'll bring them up to them. Councilor Riggs.
So I think my one question was just answered, but I have a follow-up one. But moving forward, international students can expect to be in this cohort system like next year, per se, or like?
We're very hopeful. I'm not going to say that we know that yet. Okay. My guess is that the University of Alberta will go straight into one of those, but myself and Governor Fleming, that would be conversations for us to push and have. Okay. So don't let up on those conversations and definitely keep an eye on.
Okay, awesome. It's great to get confirmation on that point. My follow-up or my secondary question was focused on the backfill funding that's been like that's happening now, that's being given to universities. So can we say that the University of Alberta budget that was created last year was based on false assumptions or assumptions that didn't come to fruition?
So the University of Alberta is like the 0% increases. Yes, that did end up being false. We have received our funding letter. We knew that a long time ago. A few months ago. Going forward, what's important is that the university is currently, and for that, I'll give them credit for this, for the first time has involved the board much earlier in their budget assumptions. I've reported here multiple times that they are planning for dire outcomes, in all honesty. So we do have an opportunity now to say, hey, last time we said that, it didn't actually end up happening. The sky is not falling. Please make sure to budget appropriately. However, I won't sugarcoat it. The university's financial situation is, like, tough. And I'm largely unmanageable without certain either clawbacks or increases. So they're going to have to balance that email.
Thank you. Question from the live stream. Thanks for the amazing. This is from Councilor Kim. Thanks for the amazing news. I've sent a picture of a handout President Larson handed out. In there it says, upon acceptance into institution, as international students must be informed what the total cost will be over normal length. What does normal length include? What will happen to students who take longer than 4 years?
So that's a really great question. So normal length is considered, and this is just in the general post-secondary context, what is considered the normal length of a program. So here, for university, it's 4 years. For college, it's 2 years. That's a really good question, though. We're not entirely sure. We haven't heard yet, and that's something that we're going to be following up on. If an international student decides to take 5 years, how is that going to affect their tuition? We're waiting on that detail.
As well, this pointedly affects grads. Although we do represent graduate students are considered, a large amount of them considered international students, and they have extremely variable lengths for masters. It could be anywhere between 1 and like 8. So this will actually have to be clarified.
Governor Fleming.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for both. I know President Larson has been working on this since last year when he was Chair of Thomas. And VP Brown, your hard work since he took office earlier this year, and all the other members of CASS or COS who were instrumental in getting this done. This is the, like you said, culmination of many years and many hours worth of work. So congrats to you both. This is a win for not just students here, but all over the province. So on to my question. Could you go back to the, was there a slide that touched on the CPI thing?
So part domestic student tuition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So it says that domestic tuition will be capped at CPI. And I'm not as well versed in provincial legislation as the both of you. So I was wondering if you might be able to help me fill in a blank here. I'm looking over the Post-Secondary Learning Act, and under the Public Post-Secondary Institutions Tuition Fees Regulation section, it already says in there that the Board of an Institution shall set tuition fees in accordance with this section, The percentage annual change in Alberta CPI determined in accordance with subsection 3 rounded to one decimal place. Mm-hmm. So is this new, or are they just kind of shining a light on it that this is what they should have been doing the entire time?
There's a yes and a no to this. I'm going to go through a fulsome explanation here. Cap at CPI was in regulation. What you just spoke to is the appendix, which you should be the old regulation, not necessarily in legislation. The new system will be enshrined within legislation, which is something we're very excited about. However, there are some things in there that are a little bit different, and they are definitely new. The cap at CPI is actually institutional-wide. It doesn't mean per program or per FLE, which means that you can have variable increases across faculty as long as the entire increase does not exceed CPI. That means that there is a... I'll keep going here. That means, let's say, arts faculty could increase its cost by up to 5% a year, and another faculty could increase them at zero. And the balance, therefore, would be CPI. That is what the new system will look like. There is an entirety of a cap of 10% per faculty. No faculty can go up more than 10% a year. However, that could lead to some interesting, like, honestly interesting accounting. So we're going to have to be a little bit more focused on that in the future. But for now, the big thing to remember is just the CPI cap in legislation, which is something that we pushed for a number of years. The back end is something that we have to now think more clearly about.
So this, either way, this will put an end to the government raising it by the academic price index, hopefully?
Yes, it will stop. The institution will no longer raise general cost by APN. Yeah. A fun fact, the regulation actually, the ministerial order expired in October. So if we didn't have this, there would have been nothing. Huzzah.
Councilor Lee.
Well, as we just heard, I am very grateful for the work you've both done on this. At the announcement, I was incredibly impressed as he was reading off his list of changes that everyone seemed better than the last one, and it just seemed... It didn't quite seem real. I'm glad that it was, in fact, real. So, yeah. So my question is, I haven't been able to find really anything about the reaction of opposition parties to the announcement. So I was wondering if we know what the UCP and the smaller parties think about this framework, if they're supportive of it, and if there's been any suggestion that if there was a change in government, the legislation or more likely regulation might change.
Yeah, so our external advocacy advisor watched the second reading today in the legislature. The biggest pushback was first on how long it took to finally release it. It was definitely overdue from what had been originally promised. But also they're talking about things like how the carbon tax affects universities. It's not
general cost increases.
Yeah.
There is a concern that a university students union could combine their efforts to increase fees exponentially. And a few other random things.
Yeah, or that all the power is left with the minister at the end of the day,
yeah.
Kind of a centralization. What I respond to that particular point with is that it's almost better that that power is left in the hands of an elected official who, if they do something that we don't like, we can vote them out. We can't do that with university administrators.
We can go a little bit more in depth to personal conversations and later to this meeting.
Okay, because Councillor Kim is in the live stream, I'm going to revoke your proxy status. So Councillor Kim, she did post her question. She said, last year, in Board of Governors meetings, they passed a motion including a 3.14% increase in international tuition fees. And that meeting, they also stated a three-year plan for continuous increase as well. Will we see some changes to this then from university administration?
Very good question. I don't know. Likely, if the plan had been laid out in that year, that might not change, because it would allow for the predictable model. However, that's pretty hard to answer right now.
Once the legislation comes into effect, though, it would only be for the incoming
yes.
international students. So it wouldn't be, once the legislation is in place, it wouldn't be for existing international students, we hope. But we're going to find a few more details on that, what exactly is the case for existing international students.
Okay, Councillor Sunday.
My question is in regards to the
cause letter writing campaign. Essentially, the campaign was a call to release the tuition review. However, the Minister of Advanced Education said the Alberta government has no intention of releasing the report. Will cause still be pushing for this report to be released?
That was, I believe, the calls was for what we saw today. The minister, to my knowledge, has said that they will not be releasing the report based on the consultations that were part of the review itself. So they did a number of consultations with faculty, staff, administration, students across the province. To my understanding, they're not willing to release that. But the letter campaign that CAUSE was doing was for exactly what we saw yesterday. That was the purpose of it.
I can give a more fulsome answer today. As well, like folks like the Gateway had asked questions about data release, saying, hey, is there any data that backs any of this up? The answer was no.
I see no more questions queued up. Is there anyone else who has questions for presenters? We have 5 minutes left. Councillor Agarwal.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to thank you guys again so much for your hard work. Great that this is the result that we have. I just have a question. So in terms of international tuition, it talks about, in your handout, it says the international students must be informed of the total cost of tuition. I guess my only concern or worry, and you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, is that the university might, depending on which inflation model they use, be able to just have a higher tuition. Are there any parameters around that to prevent that still, or was that not mentioned in this tuition review?
From my understanding, we don't yet know. However, I would assume that they'll allow the institution to set every incoming cohort's tuition. So that basically means that they would have to advertise the cost of the education to every incoming international student. And you are correct. In every discussion we've had with the university about using such a model, it has led to cost increases because the university likes to include what they call insurances. Basically, if costs were to go up massively halfway through international students' studies, they have to try and balance that out with some sort of calculation. What that looks like, we have yet to find out.
Governor Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Currently, no student tuition or government funding is invested in residences or dining services. They must operate on a break-even basis. Do you foresee any potential flexibility coming out of the new act if it passes to help alleviate that? Or is it just going to be for regarding instruction?
Fun fact, or good question. Number one, yes, that remains true, and it won't change. I can't remember the name of the capital funding or something like that. Has to remain separate. However, there is, and we haven't worked this out yet because I don't even understand fully how it works. There has been changes on how lending and borrowing is going to work for university budgets, which I don't fully understand, not gonna say that I do, but we are gonna explore what that ends up meaning because most of those projects, like the cost increases in both residents and in meal plans can, in some accounting systems, basically be equated to one, cost of construction, cost of maintenance, and cost of loans, actually. So things like Peter Wonky Hall have a loan attached that they must cover. So that could be interesting. We'll follow up with updates if you learn anything.
Any further questions? Time for one more question. Councillor Ayer.
Just a question. Can we share these documents that you've given us?
Please.
Yeah. So you have the paper one in front of you. It's a shorter condensed version because I wanted it on one page. There is a longer version I've emailed out to everyone. It's a little over 2 pages. There's some like random stuff in there that's like, this is what could happen. Don't take those for serial. Just take like the first line for like, this is actually what we know. One of them in particular is like faculty associations could be the ones who are consulted for exceptional increases in our model. Not necessarily anywhere else, but we have a very unique model in that sense.
All right. Thank you very much. We only have 50 seconds left, so the cutoff questions there. Unless we need to extend, there's currently nobody on the. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, with revoking my proxy, you said it was because of Councillor Kim, but I'm here as a...
Councillor Mahali, my apologies. I thought you were here for Councillor Kim.
So, to clarify, Councillor Mahali is not on this live stream?
No, she is not.
Okay.
My apologies. Because of that, do you have a question for them from Councillor Mahali? No? Because if you do, I'll let you out, because you're right, I messed that up.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that concludes our first presentation. We'll now move on to our second presentation proposal here. Brown moves to do a presentation of the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations. The Canadian Alliance of Student Associations is the national student voice representing undergraduate, graduate, and college/polytechnic student associations of the federal government. This presentation will cover the basic governance of CASA and showcase the value it provides to member organizations and the students across the country, as well as its plans for the rest of the year. We have time for questions at the end. Thank you, my Vice President Brown, who is the CASA chair, and President Sleggers, is that your last name? From the Red River College Students Association, who is the CASA secretary. Is there a second for this? Councilor Ferris, thank you very much. Is there any opposition receiving this presentation? Seeing none, floor is yours.
Perfect. All right, hello, folks. You're going to hear from me a lot today. So I figured that this would be a good time of the year to give you sort of an overview of CASA itself. I know I do talk about some of the work we do at CASA, some of the stuff that we're doing, some of the traveling that I do in association with it, but I think it is important, because UASU is a member of CASA, that you are completely aware of sort of the functioning of the organization, some of its history, and what it's working on now in sort of a larger scope. And so I am joined today by Lauren, who is the secretary of the board of directors of CASA from Winnipeg. So thanks for coming out. So the agenda quick for today, we're going to talk a little bit about CASA, some of the history. We're going to talk about student areas of interest in the federal government. So why is the federal government talking about post-secondary education when it's normally a provincial sort of, it's a provincially designated system. We're going to talk about our successes and then some of our efforts and results from here to now and ahead. So this is CASA. Excellent. So that was the agenda. So this is CASA. This is a picture of our membership at the Maine Foundations Conference in Ottawa. CASA is a national organization that is driven by students. It is by students for students. It is run by the membership. What is CASA? It was created back in 1995. I'm really, really proud that UASU was one of the founding members of CASA. Current MP Randy Boissonneau was actually VP External when CASA was created. I believe Calgary Mayor Nahed Nenshi was also with the U of C Students Union. So there's a lot of pretty influential people that were involved in the creation of this organization way back. CASA is a nonpartisan collective of student unions and student associations that represents and defends member interests to the federal government. So like I said, members set the direction of CASA. It's not the board, it's not the staff that we have in Ottawa, it is the members. It is a member-driven organization. We are a registered not-for-profit. We have 22 student associations. We do represent 270,000 students nationwide. With our partnership with the Quebec Students Union, that number goes up to about 340,000. And I'm really, really proud to say, and I won't make any huge announcements yet, but that will be 22 student governments and counting. We represent undergraduate, graduate, and college polytechnic student associations. So Lauren Dean from Red River College. We do talk about trades and tech issues. We talk about graduate student issues and then stuff that affects us here as undergraduates at U of A. It is a democratic member-driven organization, promotes affordable, accessible, innovative post-secondary institution of the highest quality. So we talk about student issues for our students that elected us and sent us to Ottawa representing them.
All right. So CASA, of course, does have governing documents. As Adam mentioned, CASA is a registered not-for-profit, so we are governed by the Canada Not-for-Profit Act. That dictates our articles of incorporation and the bylaws that we follow that are very strict in the way that we operate. And then we do have some more flexible pieces of governance. So we have our operating procedures. We currently have 16 operating procedures, which govern everything from the way that our committees function to different outside processes like the Alumni Council, how our conference cycle works, things like that. And we also have our strategic plan. So the strategic plan, the most recent version was created this past membership year. I led the Governance and Internal Review Committee to that, which was a very exciting opportunity to kind of renew it and refresh it. CASA, being an organization much like a students' union that has new members and new delegates participating every year, really focuses on high-level goals and allows the membership to function under that every year. So we look at the pillars of five pillars that we stand on, being membership, policy and research, advocacy, public relations, and governance. And we have some main overarching core objectives in those, but everything else is very flexible year to year on how the membership decides to interpret that and how they work with that. The board of directors is held accountable to the strategic plan, and all of our action plans and work plans are based around that every year. So the membership at CASA, like Adam mentioned, is made up of currently 22 different member associations. Every association has the ability to have a primary and secondary delegate around the table. The big difference between the primary and secondary is just that the primary is the first point of contact for CASA as an organization. So they're the one that sits around the plenary table. They're the first one that gets reached out to if there's questions that need to be asked to an association or any comments. But the secondary delegate is there as kind of a support role. They also take an active role in the working operations of the organization, and they have the opportunity to fill in at any time that the primary delegate isn't able to fulfill that. All members have full control of the organization, so at every meeting of the members, all of the different business that needs to be approved is reviewed. Actions and motions are always brought forward to the table, and they are able to be discussed, very similar to this type of structure where we all are around the table. It's discussed through Robert's Rules, which we are also governed by. And we go on the premises of one member, one vote. So each student association or union, regardless of how many students they represent, what their size is, what their financial contribution is, every single person gets the same opportunity to speak, and they all get one vote. So we make sure that everyone has an equal voice around the table. Now with these, CASA does actually cap fees at a maximum of $55,000, minimum of $5,500, ensuring that while some of the larger institutions have a higher student body, they don't necessarily need to be paying more. So we want to make sure that we are fair and equitable to all of the members.
So CASA is governed by a board of directors. This is what I have the pleasure of chairing, and it really is a fun group this year. We have, actually, our board is very national. We have BC, Alberta, Manitoba, Prince Edward Island, and New Brunswick all in the board. So it's very national. And then our home office in Ottawa, where our executive director is part of it as well. So we have the chair of the board, that's myself, the secretary, that's Lauren. Lauren oversees the governance of the organization. The treasurer, his name is Will McGuigan, he's the president of the University of Prince Edward Island Student Union this year, oversees our finances, works with our office manager in Ottawa. Director at large of advocacy is Emma Walsh this year. She's the VP Education at the St. Thomas University Students Union in New Brunswick. They focus on national advocacy campaigns, some of the approaches that we take to things like Advocacy Week, how we train delegates, making sure that everybody is prepared and able to do their advocacy when we go and meet with federal stakeholders. Director at large of policy is Victoria Schindler. She's the VP External at the University of Lethbridge Students Union. She is in charge of the policy committees. They evaluate policies sort of on a rotating basis, and then continues throughout the year. The very busy committee. Director at large of membership is G. Gill. He's the president of the University of the Fraser Valley Student Union Society. It's a mouthful. But they oversee member relations, some recruitment efforts as well, and making sure that everybody is happy to be here, which is kind of the motto of this year. Finally, we have a director at large of equity, diversity, and inclusion this year. This position is a director at large sort of general position, and its mandate is decided year over year based on what the membership would like to see. So this year, the membership did indicate a strong favor of looking at equity, diversity, and inclusion when it comes to both CASA as an internal organization, but as well as our federal advocacy. So are we properly representing those people who are currently or have previously been marginalized? Also, we have our executive director who works at our home office in Ottawa.
So CASA has six standing committees that operate every year. The National Advocacy Committee, which is headed by our director of advocacy, which focuses on different campaigns team, like Adam mentioned, pretty much everything that the Director of Advocacy focuses on. We have three different policy committees. So we have the Federal Policy Committee that deals with kind of the overarching policies, and then we also have a Trades and Tech as well as a Grad Committee that focus solely on Trades and Tech, so Polytechnic and College policies and issues, and a Graduate Committee who focuses on graduate student policies and issues. So those are all kind of, they all kind of work together to make sure that our policies are up to date. We have our Member Relations Committee, which of course looks at making sure that our members are all happy, but also looking externally. So they focus on kind of the two pieces of membership, which is making sure that our members are satisfied, but also making sure that we can grow our membership. And the Governance and Internal Review Committee, which is chaired by myself, who looks at making sure that all of our documents are up to date, that the strategic plan is being renewed as it needs to be, and that CASA is functioning as smoothly and as well as possible with the best governance structure that we can. All the committees are elected at our foundation's conference in May. There's the ability for each institution to have, or association or union to have one representative on any given committee. And there is also one ad hoc committee this year, so as we have a director at large who's focusing on equity, diversity, and inclusion, we have created a committee for that that she is chairing, and that committee is looking at a lot of different practices, ways that we can bring more student voices forward, ways that we can be more of a representative of the larger student body, as well as how we can make sure that our processes internally are making sure that we get as many students to the table as we can.
I forgot to mention the name of our EDI director. Her name is Anna Titarenko. She is the VP External at Mount Allison Student Union in New Brunswick. So like I mentioned before, we do have a partnership with the Quebec Student Union. We are the only national student organization that can say that we represent students in Quebec. It's a big source of pride for us because it gives us a lot more legitimacy when we go to the federal government, especially with Quebec MPs, obviously, the Prime Minister being one of them. Quebec Student Union has 8 student associations and counting. They're also in a stage of growth. They have about 12 observers right now, but they're only 8 members, so they're estimating a lot of growth, hopefully, in the next few years. They represent about 79,000 students as of right now. That might actually hopefully change this year and go up. And they are a mix of graduate and undergraduate students. However, they're primarily graduate students, so they do contribute a fair bit to our Graduate Policy Committee. The partnership is going to expire in May 2019. I'm leading the renegotiation effort right now. We had our first meeting the other day. It's going really, really well. Both CASA and the UBQ are very excited to renew the partnership, hopefully extend the length of the partnership, and then there's a number of other details that we're currently in the process of negotiation. Hopefully that's done by March and we can ratify that. So how does the federal government pertain to post-secondary education? In a lot of ways. Various departments, even though there's not a department of education or post-secondary education, it deals with a lot of things like finances, so tax policies, federal budget, so when we look at tax credits, also looking at employment, social development, Canada, so things like the Canada Summer Jobs Program. I'm sure some people here have probably benefited from that before. I know I have. A lot of different employment strategies. We try to contribute to that as much as possible. Also looking at things like Statistics Canada, we want to make sure that the data that we are advocating on is relevant and up to date. Elections Canada, we try to get out the vote campaigns. Our last one was 2015, and I'll chat about that a little bit later. Innovation Science and Economic Development Canada is responsible for what's called the Tri-Agencies Council, which is a number of research, which is three research bodies of or research funding bodies of the federal government that often send research funding, obviously, to universities. That affects graduate students a little bit more than anybody else, but undergraduate students are still counted in that. Health Canada does provide funds and health and transfers for things like mental health funding to provinces sent to students. And Citizenship and Immigration Canada, so when you're talking work visas for international students, which is something that we're still continuing to push, when you're talking to the pathway to citizenship for international students, that would be that department. And the Indigenous and Northern Affairs Canada, so the Post-Secondary Student Support Program, which is a program that helps Indigenous students gain more access to post-secondary education, is managed by that department. And that's only a few things that we talk about when we advocate to the federal government. There are also a number of different other stakeholders that talk to the federal government like we do, some of them being Universities Canada, which the University of Alberta is a part of, Polytechnics Canada, which I'm assuming Red River is probably a part of, the Assembly of First Nations, the Library, I can't remember what Carl exactly stands for, but I know it's Librarians, and a number of other organizations. So there's a lot of conversation and a lot of different voices in the conversation, but we are very proud that we're the leading student voice when it comes to sort of a go-to student organization.
And CASA has a lot of different ways that we advocate this and that we push our information and our press out. Things like media engagement, so that may be things like news, paper, like print media, but also social media. We're trying to really get a really good social media presence because we know that a lot of students in the student movement aren't necessarily reading paper newspapers anymore. So we want to make sure that we're being very diverse in the way that we reach students and the way that we engage the media. We work with a lot of different partnerships. So Adam mentioned the partnership with the Rec Students Union, but we also have partnerships for some of our campaigns. So our Get Out the Vote campaign, we partnered with Apathy is Boring, so trying to increase the student voter turnout, try to get students really engaged. We're running a mental health campaign that's going to be coming up in January, which is very exciting. And we are partnering with the Mental Health Commission of Canada on that, which was a really great opportunity. We participate in a lot of different consultations with the government, and thankfully we have a lot of great relationships that have given us a lot of opportunities to contribute. And we, of course, have our meetings. So we have our lobby week coming up at the end of November. And at that time, we'll have anywhere from 100 to 200 meetings with different MPs, senators. We have over 100 meetings already confirmed for this year, which is excellent. And so we meet with so many different city stakeholders, MPs, senators, commissions, and different groups as well. And so we have the opportunity through our research as well to really put this word out and really get our voice heard. And there's a few kind of main ways that we do engage the federal government, one being a pre-budget submission. So this year we have released our pre-budget submission that looks at the expansion of the Canada Summer Jobs Program, a 6-month interest-free non-repayment period for student loans, removing requirements for international students that have to get separate work permits from their study permits if they want to participate in co-ops, getting more research funding for graduate students because while there is quite a bit out there, it's often not given out equitably, and we want to make sure that students can access that, and as well creating grants for grad students, so grad students don't have the same access to Canada Student Loans Program that undergrad students do, and we want to make sure that they're able to access that as well. And like I mentioned, our advocacy week happens every November that we are able to meet with usually at least over 150 senators and stakeholders, and have a very large presence. In 2016, I believe, yes, we had the largest advocacy presence on the Hill. We do have a very large group of students that are all participating, are all taking active roles in these meetings, and so we really see that we are listened to when we do that.
And that's not even just the biggest advocacy effort on the Hill for a student group, that's of any group in Canada. So any lobby group in any domain, we had the biggest one. And we continue to be one of the largest advocacy efforts in the country, which is something I'm very proud of. So how do we engage the federal government? So like Lauren mentioned, we do a number of consultations or budget submissions and you know, research papers and a different number of different submissions. Some of the things that we've talked about before, in the innovation agenda submission, any campus sexual assault presentation to the Status of Women Committee, so I believe that's what Schiffer Gavincetti, who is the former chair of CASA and is the current executive director of CAUSE, was doing last year. We do pre-budget submissions, like I mentioned, poverty reduction submissions. We try to submit papers to really anything that is concerning of students and that will impact a student experience here at the U of A. How much time have we got left, John? Excellent. Right, policy papers. So CASA has published a number of policy papers. All of these can be found on the website, so I'm not going to tell you all about them because I want you to go check them out for yourself. They're really great research, and they really do point to some pretty shocking situations for a number of students in the country, whether it be the mental health problems that the post-secondary students face or international student problems as well.
get out the vote. So, Councillor Raitt is just as excited about this as I am, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. We put on a massive nationwide Get Out the Vote campaign in 2015 federal election. We got on the Rick Mercer report, which is pretty darn cool. We can't do that anymore because Rick Mercer's not doing his show, but we're going to like try to get on 22 minutes or something. I'd like to do that. We engaged last time 42,000 students across the country to vote. We are absolutely aiming to go higher this year. Sorry, next year for the October 2019 election.
So I'll run through this pretty quickly, but CASA kind of follows a very similar cycle every year, and then May to July is typically when we really start things up. We have our foundations conference kind of mid-May. That's when the board of directors is elected. That's when all the committees are elected, and that's really when the work starts. That's when we get all of the 22 member associations, all of their delegates, all of their representatives together in a room, as well as some observers, of course, that often participate in our conferences. And we listen to, we have kind of a big brainstorming session of what are all of the issues facing your students, facing you on campus as a student group. It's kind of a free-for-all in what you can talk about, anything that you can think about that affects students. That is then condensed down with home office staff as well as the board of directors, and that turns into a consultation process. That consultation, we usually put out about 10 different kind of main themes that came forward, and each member has the opportunity to rank those themes from 1 to 10, what their priorities are for their specific institution or association, and then the board of directors then compiles all of that and spends a very lengthy time trying to work to make sure that we can put together, you know, 4 or 5 kind of main themes that satisfy every student association and that we can really push for this year. What are the biggest issues pressing students, and what can we also advocate effectively for? Once all those results are put forward, this year we have so a few main themes. We've split it into research as well as advocacy asks this year. So our advocacy being graduate student grants, skills and employment.
Student financial aid. Last one. I always forget the last one. I'm going to admit that. International students. Thank you.
And so those are our advocacy themes. Those were themes that we CASA already did a lot of work on, that we had policy papers on, that there was policy and other research that was ready to go and ready to advocate on. And then we also created some research themes. So the research themes for this year were Indigenous students and sexual violence on campus. Both of those themes were areas that CASA hadn't done a lot of research on yet and that were still needing to be developed before they are brought to government. Thankfully, all of those themes get brought together, they get voted on and approved at our policy and strategy conference over the summer, and our committees start to work. And those themes all turn into asks, some of them more prevalent than others, and we were very happy to see our research theme of sexual violence turn into one of our advocacy themes for this year, because we had a really big push through committees and through CASA home office staff to do the research that we needed to get this brought forward. So like I said, throughout the summer, kind of July, August, into the fall is when a lot of committees work. They start to get a lot of their work done. We're doing the pre-budget submissions. Our home office staff is meeting with as many ministers and other MPs in advance of our lobby week to make sure that they know the information beforehand and that they're able to start kind of thinking about it and stewing on it, so that when our students come forward that they already have a little bit of recollection of it. And we all get ready for advocacy week, which comes in November. I've mentioned it before, so I won't go over it again too much, but that's really when we have our biggest push for advocacy. That's when we are also approving our different policy updates and different governing document updates at our plenary session. And we have, of course, follow-up through November and December. But November is when we really, really push with government and try to get these asks out. January and February is when a lot of the work for specific committees like the Governance and Internal Review Committee happens, and also when we're just doing a lot of updates, doing a lot of follow-up. Every member at CASA has the opportunity to let staff know, and they follow up with every MP, whether they need a letter, whether they want more information, whether they want questions answered. Our staff is wonderful in being able to do that. And that all leads us up to our annual general meeting, which happens in March. This meeting is really when everything is wrapped up for the year. This is typically the last conference that any outgoing executives come to. On occasion, some incoming executives are able to attend this too to help with the transition period. This is when we see a lot of year-end reports, reviews of the year, and that's also the final opportunity for policies, governing documents, and anything like that to be reviewed throughout the year. And then we start all over again.
Are we even on time?
6 minutes.
Excellent. Okay, I'll take a few minutes for this. So talk about some of our successes over the last number of years. This is one of our pre-budget submissions, and one of the federal budgets. You'll notice it's very similar. Sometimes pull-up parties like to take what we write and put it into their own work, and we're not complaining, because that means that we're winning. Budget 2016 had a number of wins for students. I've sent everybody the slides, so you can sort of read those over yourselves. One of the biggest ones was an infrastructure investment of $2 billion. That's one I will absolutely highlight. 2017 had $90 million invested into the PSSSP, into Indigenous access to post-secondary education. That was an absolute win. But there's still a lot of work to do, so we're still trying to push that. Budget 2018 had the largest, almost $1 billion in research funding that can benefit research across the country. It was the largest. Huge win, especially for our graduate students, but that does also impact undergraduate students in a certain capacity. Some of the stuff that we were talking about, or some of the successes from 2016, 2018, fixed rate contribution and the abolition of the work assessment. So in-study summer incomes for the needs assessment of student associations, the introduction of Canadian postsecondary experience into the express entry assessment for international students, an investment of $90 million, talked about that already in the PSSSP, and the elimination of unpaid internships in federally regulated sectors. So we're trying to still continue with unpaid internships, eliminating those in not just the federal sector, but all sectors, but that was for sure a big win. Some of our ongoing efforts, so like I mentioned, Get Out the Vote 2019, something we're covering here, something Councillor Rates and I are very, very still excited about. That's a national effort. We are going to be running a mental health campaign in January, so keep an eye out for that. We'll probably ask you to share some stuff on social media. The creation of the EDI committee, one of the largest advocacy efforts. The partnership agreement, like I mentioned, our EGM is we're going to Halifax this year. I'm really excited. I haven't been up there in a long time. And we just released an international student policy paper that is really interesting and challenges a lot of the myths that are associated with international students. We'll head into questions.
4 minutes left. Would you like me to moderate?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Councillor Sunday.
Has CASA ever considered creating either a standing committee or ad hoc committee regarding Aboriginal student advocacy?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So this is something that our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee is examining this year. So I had a meeting last week with the ARC committee, and I have a lot of recommendations. I took a lot of notes and stuff that I'll bring back to them. I do think absolutely that CASA needs to be making sure that Indigenous people are around the table when we make those decisions. And it's not something that has traditionally been there. So as we move forward, I'd love to see something along those lines happen.
Votes for Councillor Moale.
Thank you. Why does the UASU represent the U of A on CASA instead of the GSA?
So the GSA, the U of A GSA, just by the way, they haven't become members yet. It's on the will of their membership. I actually had a meeting with Sasha Vanderklein, who's the president of the GSA, the other day, because I'd love to have them in CASA. We're talking with a lot of other graduate student associations as well across the country. So we'd love to have all of them if we could. No doubt about it.
Councillor Lee.
thank you for the presentation. I'm sure we all found it quite informative. I was just wondering, because this is not in these particular details, not something I know very much about. I was wondering what CASA's relationship is with the Canadian Federation of Students, which has 64 member SUs and 500,000 students. I was wondering what the key differences are between CASA and the CFA that lead them to be separate.
It's a complicated question. I won't talk about the CFS because they are a different stakeholder, but I will say that the UASU was once a member of the CFS. We left and we went and created CASA, along with the University of Calgary Students Union, Dalhousie, as well, I believe, Waterloo, and a couple of others. CASA is very proud on being an open, transparent, democratic organization. We do have a fee cap. That is one thing that differentiates us in order to ensure that the one member, one vote exists. But we're very proud that CASA does continue to be the leading reputation. CASA does continue to be the leading student voice in the country.
Councilor Bielak. Thank you for the presentation. Please excuse my lack of knowledge, but I assume that VP Brown is the primary delegate and the president is the secondary delegate on CASA?
Funny enough, no. So when I became chair, President Larson was automatically bumped up to primary delegate from UASU. I have no, when we are in a plenary, I'm not a representative, actually just in general, in my role as chair, I'm not a representative of UASU to CASA. I am the chair, so I do represent the entire body and I'm the primary spokesperson for the organization. Yeah, so I'm sorry, President Larson. I gave him a lot more work than he had hoped for.
Can I follow up?
Yep.
Is there then a secondary delegate besides President Larson, or is it just him?
No, we didn't do a secondary delegate. It's up to institutions to decide. We figured it wasn't necessary.
We have less than a minute left. We have three people speaking listed their motion to extend. Governor Flammer, is there a second? Okay, Councillor Palmer, all in favor of extending for 15 minutes? We do require a two-third majority to extend. Placards up, please. I know some of you don't have placards, you don't.
I'll join you. Don't fall into peer pressure. I know, it's like, all right.
I opposed.
There's already two.
Oh,
yeah, me too. I joined right.
Okay, we'll now go to Councillor Palmer.
Thank you. I was just wondering if CASA had a position on logging the Canvas, and it doesn't say anything on the website anywhere about it, so I just wondered if that was on the sort of action item list or something.
Yeah, I'm the lead guy. No, we do not currently have.
You said I'm the lead guy.
It's something that I think we should be looking into, with in particular towards when we're talking about mental health issues. But as of right now, no, we do not. But I think, yeah, we should be looking.
I will say the Governance and Internal Review Committee this year is doing a review of our code of conduct. So that, of course, will have to be updated. We do follow a code of conduct at all of our conferences that members are, any participating delegates are held accountable to, and that will be updated this year to reflect the revision.
Or more so, just lobbying to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I hope we can eventually.
Councillor
Belcourt. I was wondering if CASA does anything or like advocates on behalf of like students who parent or parents of students, and how, like, if there's anything specific or mature students, or if that would just fall under the large category of diversity and inclusion.
I can't remember off the top of my head. President Larson's giving me a thumbs up, so he has maybe read a policy that I haven't, but I can follow up on exactly what that is.
Sunday.
So I have a question and a potentially follow-up question. With the devolution of Indigenous and Northern Affairs Canada, how has CASA's consultation to the federal government changed in regards to Aboriginal students?
I'm happy to follow that up as well. I can ask our executive director for some more details.
Okay. And I just have, if I may ask one more question, does CASA advocate to the federal government on behalf of non-status Indians as well?
I believe we do advocate to the federal government on behalf of self-identifying Indigenous students.
Thank you. President Larson.
Not so much a question as much as a comment. I do want to thank Lauren for coming all the way across the country to give this presentation. It's very nice of her. As well as, I do want to congratulate VP Brown on his role as CASA chair. It is a very large responsibility and requires him to balance a number of commitments that normally a Vice President External might not do. As well, I will personally say I feel much more connected to CASA's work this year. Adam has done a fantastic job in leading the board, as well as leading that organization, I believe, in a very healthy, positive, and open direction comparative to other years. I am happy to do the small dev. extra work of lifting my hand at a table every now and again for those sort of things.
Any further questions from the floor? We have 11 minutes remaining. Once, twice.
I have one.
Yes, go ahead.
What else can we do to help?
Great question. If you haven't followed CASA on social media, give them a follow. When CASA does release our mental health campaign in January, it's something I'll be bringing to council to make sure that hopefully this is something that council can support in enrolling to students, as well as when we talk about Get Out the Vote 2019, the federal election, we would like pledges to vote. If you want to volunteer, please talk to Councillor Reyes.
All right, any further questions? Governor Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you both for the presentation. Quite informative. You mentioned the up to $2 billion for the Post-Secondary Institution Strategic Investment Fund as a student success from budget, federal budget 2016. How much of that $2 billion, ballpark off the top of your head, if you don't know exactly, how much of that benefited students here at the U of A?
I'm happy to follow up.
Under determining the priorities, like step two, it says that there's committee training. I was curious if CASA does any anti-oppression or bias recognition training.
That's actually something that is in the works this year with the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee. They have been reviewing a number of different training opportunities for the delegates as well as different committee members, because sometimes those who participate on committees aren't necessarily delegates that come to the conferences. The committees are open to all members and anyone who's from that membership, despite whether they're a primary delegate, secondary delegate, or not. So that is something that committee is in the process of reviewing. They actually met with, I think it was CNFX. University has a structure that they're starting to look at, and they're looking at how they can develop that a little bit more and build on that training so that they can provide it to the entire membership and not just the teams.
Governor Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Up until 2017, students not only here but at other institutions with a UPass were able to claim the cost of that as a credit on their tax, but the government proposed and received assent on that budget to eliminate that credit. I've since heard from multiple students that that had a detrimental effect on their returns. I was wondering if there's any priority to lobby to have that reinstated in coming years.
It's a great question, and I would ask you to send me an email with some of those details, and I'll follow that or forward it to our Federal Policy Committee and Executive Director, because that's a great point.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much to our presenters. We'll conclude the presentation. It's currently 7:22. I'll recess up a little bit early. We'll come back and do everything else after the recess.
How much is it? There's not too much left on the agenda.
Well, we have the reports for everything. We have the
report
question period. We have presentations.
Okay.
So we'll recess early. So
9:22.
9:22. Oh, I'm just sitting, looking at computer
screens.
It's 8 a.m. And not even just like reading things. I've been interpreting words and writing and thinking. I can feel this portion.
I mentioned my apologies. Do that quick. President Larson.
Here.
Vice President Badenar. Vice President Brown.
Here.
Vice President Ripka.
Here.
Vice President Bourgeois.
Here.
Governor Klamath.
Here.
I'm ready.
Councilor Lynn.
Yes.
Councilor Kobus.
Yeah.
Councilor Anderson?
Yeah.
Councilor Rakes?
Here.
Talks Councilor Mahali?
Here.
Councilor Hussain is the live stream. Councilor Bilak?
Here.
Councilor Kadar? Councilor Lee?
Here.
Councilor Hussain? Councilor Stack?
Here.
Councilor Ferris?
Here.
Councilor Thibodeau?
Here.
Councilor Ansari is the live stream. Councilor Yao?
Here.
Councilor Rosalind?
Here.
Councilor Bose?
Here.
Councilor Adwan?
Here.
Councilor Chung is in the live stream. Councilor Ahmad?
Here.
Councilor Sunday?
Here.
Councilor Nguyen?
Here.
Councilor Palmer?
Present.
Councilor Azuki is in the live stream. Councilor Hiddush?
Here.
Councilor Kim is in the live stream. Councilor Pinto?
Here.
Councilor Agarwal?
Here.
Councilor Rizvi?
Here.
Councilor Bruce?
Here.
And Councilor Belcourt?
Here.
Right, it's 9:24. We just have 15 minutes.
I'm not weak enough for that. And I think that would work.